If you have somebody to send at my place, I'd appreciate it, or I'll pay you how much costs it, 20 zlotys or something in Senna. And then, so what happened? They had so many people to work already. Plus that, if they saw girls or they saw men on the street, they grabbed them anyway. I remember I was already working, let's say I had to work 2 days a week or 3 days a week. My father was a shoemaker, my brother was a tailor, and I was working with my father. So sometimes my father went to this gentleman and said, listen, my son will work for me, for him and for his brother. He will work 5 days a week. You got a place for him. So he found a place where I went in the army and shined the shoes when they came back when they went out for exercise, when they went out, when they came back, I grabbed their shoes, shining. Or I had to clean the toilets, I had to clean the bathrooms, those kind of works. So still, they were not satisfied with that, what he delivered those people. Plus that, they went in the, who they wanted to drove by with the truck, and when they saw some young people on the street, they grabbed them. You always were on, you couldn't walk out. If you went out to buy a bread or something, so if you crossed the street, then they organized Jewish police, and the Jewish policemen, they're supposed to work on the Jewish side, or they helped. If they got the order, they took the order from the Germans too.
How did the people feel about this Jewish employment agent?
The Jewish employment agent helped a little bit, and then became a business. Then it became a business.
What did he do before the war?
He was, I think, a paper writer, a newspaper writer. His name was Riedelmann. So that then became a business. For instance, like I mentioned, if you need 500 people, he sent out 1,000 names. 200-300 people came paid in. The 500 people came to work, and he got 200-300 people paid in. Well, right away, start to become a business.
Did they pay the workers?
No. For instance, the Germans want 500 people for tomorrow. He went and he had his helpers, and he sent out 1,000 names. The 500 people came to, they came voluntarily to work. Or the other 500, they paid. We didn't know that he sent out 1,000 names. And the other 500 or 400 people came in and paid to the Israeli to put a person on his place. Only if he had already the 500 people, and the 400 people paid in, there was clear money. Only he needed always the money. Because if somebody was it happened to me that I realized he need the money, because thank God that what we survived is because you could bribe the Germans. I mean, a German was easy to bribe. Or you bribe him with a diamond ring, or you bribe him with a watch, or you bribe him with good food, or you bribe him with cognac, with good drinks, or with cigarettes, or you could bribe him with good boots. They liked good leather boots, or with a fur coat. It happened to me that I was almost to be shot, and this Riedelmann saved our lives.
What happened?
What happened that when I had 5 days to work steady for him, so he took about 30, 35 fellas, and we were assigned to one soldier, and he came and he picked us up with the truck, and from the city to the railroad station was about 6 or 8 kilometers, and he took us over to the railroad station. We had to unload coal from the boxcars. And then from the army, they used to come to this railroad station with requisitions, and we used to give to the soldiers the coal. We load up their trucks with coal. Only it was cold in the winter, and we need coal you couldn't buy. Everything was rationed. How much coal we could get per week or per month, and how much bread, now we did. So we tried to ask the soldier. He was a very nice fella. We asked him if it's possible we can take some coal. He said it's impossible. He will go and ask the officer, And he would go ask. He never asked. And we went and we tried. And we were so with him that even we took it, he didn't say nothing, because we were already working with him a couple of weeks. That like he didn't keep us. He didn't have no hate for us at all. So we went and we start taking home big piece of coal like a monument. And when we took up the bed, so for instance, me, I had a family like my father and mother and sisters and brothers. I took home this piece of coal. Or some people went and started selling the coal and started to become a little market in the neighborhood. So right away, they started to smell it out from where that comes. And it was some went and squealed to the high official that those people were there unloading the box cars, coal, they stealing the coal and they're selling in the Jew, but not a ghetto. This time was not the ghetto, it was a Jewish, the Jewish people usually lived mostly together. So it happened that this officer went to surprise us. He sent out the gendarme, and when we went back from work, they stopped our truck and they searched our truck and we have coal. So the soldier found it out that today the officer is going to send out the lieutenant or the colonel, who he was, is going to send out the gendarme and he's going to stop us on the road and see if we have coal. And we didn't take no coal at all. And when the gendarme with the motorcycles, they stopped us and they told us to get off on the truck. And we got off on the truck and they went in the truck and they didn't find another drop of coal because we didn't take it. So the squealer, the moose, like we say Jewish, he was he didn't tell the truth. So anyway, if you steal, if you get away once or twice, or you got to be caught, and we got caught. When we got caught, they put us in a little jail, in the city jail. And then they put us out in five in the lane with the rifles and bayonet, and they took us. We had a big jail, and then we marched down to the jail. And the mothers and the fathers were standing and crying, oh, who knows what's going to happen to our children. And we marched down to the jail, and they started interrogating us. So we made up one slogan, that we asked the guard for a piece of coal, and he refused. Or one time he said he will ask the officer if we can take home a piece of coal, and the patient went out. We didn't have no more patient to wait till he will give us the answer, and was too cold, and we took it without his okay. And because we didn't want to involve him, the soldier, because right away was a threat, they go send him away to the Russian front. So we tried to protect him. So this little Edelman, he went to this officer, to this SS man, but he knows he's going to interrogate us, and he bribed him. I heard they give him some fur coat, they give him some boots, give him some diamonds, and he made one sentence for us, one sentence. He said, if you do it again, then you're going to be shot. And put us on the truck and send us back to the work, to the same job, only with a different guard. Or we couldn't touch from this time. Not because we couldn't touch, we could bribe this guard or talk him into it too. Only the thinking was it that we were afraid already. If we were get second time, it was no excuse, not by the Germans. So we were luckily, we got off the first time.
What were the High Holy Days like in 1939?
1939 was normal. The High Holidays we conduct normal. 1940 was we conduct normal. Well, in 1941, I was home. We had to already, I think, was already separately. We had to, I think we still went to this, no? I don't think so. We went to, in 41, 40 we went to Zeringa. 41, I don't remember, we went to Zeringa. We had to already, to not the groups or in big groups.
Were you still active in 1939, 1940 with the Beitar?
No. Everything was dissolved. Because we already, some ran away because Russia saved a lot of Jews. A lot of in our hometown went over because we had the Wisla, and then we had another river called the Bug, and the Russian came to the Bug, to the Sam, it was another river, Sam, and a lot of boys and girls went over to the, on the Russian side, because they saw that we didn't, the first year or two, we didn't talk about crematoriums, about guessing, we didn't think about those kind of things. Maybe they will take us up to labor camps, we will have to labor, and our parents still remember the World War I. There was no gas chambers, there was no, well, maybe they will take us for laboring or for concentration camps. Was not so much talked about like about labor camp. Then we heard it's a Majdanek, then it's a Treblinka, then we have found out it's an Auschwitz.
When did you find out about?
That already in 1941, we were already talking about. Then they said they're building concentration camps in Germany, Dachau, in Auschwitz, in Buchenwald, in those, well, that start coming out. And we couldn't believe it. They will take fathers and mothers and children. All right, I'm 18 years old, I'm able to go to work. My brother was 20, 21, 22. We're going to suffer. Oh, nothing. Only if they start hitting, beating, shooting, without questioning, without nothing, without every day, on the round. I volunteered, I worked on the roads for a company called Straßenbahn Gesellschaft Omler from Stuttgart. So I used to work on the roads. I used to put asphalt on the roads, so we were a group, and we used to went away for weeks.
When did that start?
That started in 1940.
And did you get paid for doing that?
Yes. Not for too long. They paid us. Not for too long. And then right away they cut off the pay. They gave us soup, and we slept by the farmers, and we left the house, we left the homes, and for the weekend we returned for clothes, for changing clothes and that. Only we were thinking that's not going to be like was.
Did you volunteer to do that work?
No, I volunteered because I covered the family. So I asked Radelman if he could give me a steady job. So that was the steady job to go over there. So I worked on the roads and put the asphalt down. And then in the wintertime, we used to heat the box cars, the tanks. And we used to, the asphalt, the tar, we used to melt it like liquidy. Then we used to build burrows, big wood burrows, and we used to pour in the asphalt in those burrows. And then in the springtime, the burrows got this, how to say it, they
expanded.
And expanded, the asphalt started running out. It was, I tell you, the tar was a terrible thing. We used to get drowned in that. We had to pick up by tails. And when we walked in with our feet, we couldn't pull out our feet from that. Anyway, I'm telling, because of the free country, I'm just telling you how was that stupid, not thinking how they just that labor, free labor. So we were doing things. I remember in 1939, in the winter, the ice was frozen. I'm jumping from one place to the other one. The ice was frozen, and they didn't want it. The ice, when they build up the bridge, they didn't want the ice. So we had to go out with the soldiers. They used to knock out holes, and we used to dynamite those ice. I remember one time the ice busted, and I was standing on a piece of ice, and I had to wait till he came over and he picked me up. He came with this, I don't know how to say, with a little boat, and he picked us up. And we were standing on ice, and we used to go out from the land to the middle in the river. And then we used to bore holes, and then on the end of the board, we used to light it up, and we used to put it in, blow it up, and here we're standing on a piece of chunk of ice. They came, and they rescued us.
Did you know how to swim?
No. No, swim, we know how to swim. On the winter time, to go in the ice water.
So, how long did you work for this road crew?
For the Omler, I used to work about a year and a half or more. About a year and a half. Then I worked the other odd jobs in the cleaning by the army. And then with the coal.
You returned back to your hometown?
Yeah, yeah. And then finally in 1942, they came in, they broke into the house. It was already like a ghetto. A Jewish policeman with the Germans. And I had a paper to show that I'm working for Himmler. Nothing helped, and they took us to the jail. It was a big place over there, and they took all the young fellas, most of the young people, and they put us in the boxcars, and they shipped me out to a munition factory.
Did they take your brothers?
No, they didn't. My brother, he hid it. My brother and my two brothers, they hid it. And I was thinking that I'm working for this company, that they're not going to touch me. Only they said, for him, we replace other people. And they took me away in 1942 to Skarzysko.
Did they take your father?
No. My father was shipped out a month or 6 weeks later. My father, my mother, my sister, my two brothers, they shipped him out, I think, to Auschwitz. Because we had a guy from the Judenrat, and he used to come bring us mail or something. And the last time he came, he says, no more, because they're all gone. The city's clear. They shipped everybody away.
And that was the last time you saw your father?
I saw it for last time in June in 42. And I didn't see him no more. So then my brother they took my brother to another labor camp, an ammunition factory too. And I found it out that my brother's alive, my oldest brother. And we contacted each other through a Polak. He used to go from one place to the other one. I gave him a little letter, and then they shipped out my brother to Auschwitz, from Auschwitz someplace else. I lost him. If he survived, he was 4 years older than me, he would contact my uncle and aunt here in Detroit, they have their whole family. Well, he didn't contact nobody, so I knew it. And from Skarzysko, I worked over the ammunition factory to 43, around a little later than 43, and then they shipped me out to Buchenwald.
This was all of the Jews working in this ammunition factory were shipped to Buchenwald?
Buchenwald.
What did they tell you you were going to be doing there?
Nothing. They didn't say nothing. We were like, this time, we were already in this Krasisko. We're talking about Auschwitz, so many Jews got killed. In Bergen-Belsen, so many Jews got killed. Nobody mentions about Skarzysko. In Skarzysko, swallowed 100,000 Jews. There was three camps, A, B, C. It was A, I was working in making the shells for cannons. I was working very hard. Who is a survivor from Skarzysko, and he finds out, hears that I work for the Garnaten, across from the bathhouse. When you walk by over there, the fires was just like hell. Hell is, I must be, that is hot. And the fires, we used to heat it, the steel, and we used to shape the steel, and we used to roll it in hot scent. The scent was boiling. And people used to walk in the scent. If they didn't have no racks on the shoes, we didn't have no shoes. If we had some shoes, we had to put up some racks. If some scent got to the feet, right away blisters, and people was falling left and right. Where I was working, I used to shoot in the shells in the wall, and every day they brought in people, and they fell. Every shell weighed 55 kilo. And 2.5 pounds a kilo, you can imagine how many pounds that is. And when they picked it up and they couldn't put it in, and they fell with the shell, so many people died. And then in the Camp C in Skarzysko, they used to pour it in the picrine, the throttle, the powerful thing. People walked around yellow. Everybody was yellow. And was indescribable. Just people were dying left and right. We were dying from three ways. We were dying from work, we were dying from hunger, we were dying from the from the Verkshuts, from the Ukraine, when they were watching us, the guards, and we were dying from the formats, but they were all half Polacks, full Deutsche, or they were Ukrainian, or they were Polacks, and then we were dying. And, and on top of that, we came home, so we were dying from the Jewish policemen too sometimes.
Let's go into more detail of this. You said people were dying of starvation.
Starvation is beating too.
What did they give you to eat?
They give us, in the morning we got up, we didn't get nothing. Maybe black coffee. And then if I worked in daytime, so they brought the soup to the factory. So what was, I remember it was liquidy. They took the from potatoes, it's starch. And they used to make a soup with the starch. And the starch got, when the starch falls down, the water was liquid. Sometimes they had beets, pickled beets. It was no meat, was no potatoes or noodles or something. They forget about it. It was a liquidy soup. And then we came home, so it was a loaf of bread for 12 or 13 people. And if you think that a diamond cracker cracks diamonds exactly to the, or he doesn't crack as good as the guy that was cutting this bread. He was cutting to the precision, and everybody wanted two ends. So how many ends of bread has got? And so we divided like in a room. First, we lived in Economia, in a building called Economia. And Economia had little cages, like you saw in the Holocaust that they showed you, people in little cages. We couldn't sit, we couldn't stand. Oh, you had to lay on your stomach, or you could lay on your back. And everybody wanted to look around on the floor what's going on. And there was maybe about 12, 13, 14 high. And everybody liked to run higher, higher, higher. And we were looking around down. So the person where they received the soup, and he was a heavy smoker, he wanted to smoke. So he used to go around and selling the soup. So when the soup got cold, so it was an expression. Where will Koifa gedacht the soup that the left was tight, that the spoon still sticks in the soup, so thick the soup got. Almost just potato starch, you know. So he sold the soup for a cigarette, or maybe for half a cigarette. But this guy died. And, or the piece of bread. And so he wanted a cigarette, so he didn't eat, so he sold his piece of bread for a cigarette. And so then the economy was so dirty, filthy. Where you slept in one night, you didn't sleep the other night. And we were laying on this in these cages and looking down, and if you had to go with the water, excuse me, and when you're hungry, you're cold, you have to run. So when we came down, and we had to stay in the line by the door, and he only sent out five in the time or three in the time to the toilet. Until I made it to the door, I already made it in the pen, so I returned back, and I couldn't find my place. Somebody already lays on my place, so I had to find another place. Even if I had a few racks, a shirt or a pants or something, sometimes I couldn't find it. I sort of laid it down. I figured I would return to the same place. I never returned to the same place.
How many days a week did you work?
6 days. So Sunday was worse. Sunday we changed the shift. So we had to go from 7 to 12, I think, or to 2. And then to go in 12 midnight shift to 7 in the morning. And Sunday changed the shift. And the hours when we were at home, we had to do the cleaning. So then they built up a new camp with barracks and with rooms with the bunk beds. So then was a little easy living. So four people, two at top and two at the bottom. It was made by 15, 20 bunk beds, about 40 people in a room. So then was a little different. We know each other, we could trust each other, was a little different. All in the first one when we came to Skarzysko, the Hasak, and in this in the who lived in the economy, if somebody survived, very different. And the Jewish policeman walked around over there and they hit you over nothing. Over nothing. We had one, I will mention, it was Krzepicki, and the other one was Tepperman. They were two murderers. I'm ashamed to say this, but I went through this all day, were two murderers. I don't know if they are alive. They were from Rado.
Did people talk about trying to escape from here?
Yes, they were talking about escaping. Where they got to escape? I had a fellow, he lives now in Montreal. His name is Yidel Teitelbaum. And he said to me, Beric, let's run away. The hair was cut off. The clothes, we were wearing our civilian clothes, so clothes was torn, dirty, filthy. And the Polacks were walking around and looking for a Jew, like we looking now for Messiah should come. If they found a Jew, so they right away they turned me into the police or to the gendarme, to the Germans, and they received a carton of cigarette or a liter of kerosene or a pound of sugar. So they walked around looking for a Jew. And it was wires, but 3-4 electric wires. Go make through those wires was hard. Only the way to escape was between to go to work, between the camp to the factory, was about 2-3 miles. You could escape this way if somebody would wait something to pick you up. Or the otherwise, to go through those wires, people made it. It was very hard. If they caught him the other side, they brought him back and they shot him.
Was there just Jewish men in this camp?
In Strasburg was only Jewish men. Was Polacks too. Only they came in to work because that's an ammunition factory before the war. And they were working over there before the war. They were the foremen. They were the mechanics, you know. They came in during the morning and they went in the evening. They went home in the evening. Only which shift they worked. So, well, they could go home. They got paid. That was their regular job. And this title, what I mentioned, what is in Montreal, he managed to escape. Or he went in, because he comes from a village, not far from my hometown, and he went in and he knew a girl, but he went with her to school, and she hid him in the stall with the cows and the, about 2-3 years. Finally, when he, and the, her parents didn't know it. If the parents knew it, that he's hidden over there, because if he get caught, she would get shot and her whole family.
She was Jewish or Gentile?
No, Gentile, Polak. So then, after the war, he married her, and she converted to Judaism. They got two girls that are living in Montreal. And when I go to Canada, Montreal, we are like two brothers. We see each other, we hug each other. And we always talk about, we never forget what we went through together. Only he didn't, he said, no, I'm not going to stay here. You won't go with me? I said, you got where to go, where I will go. Maybe she will accept him, or where I could go.
Did the people in the camp talk about revolting against the guards?
Was about the revolting was very difficult to talk about. First of all, if a person is hungry, he's only looking how he can find something to eat. Or from revolting was very, we didn't think about it. Maybe some other people was commandos. Commandos, that means like bricklayers, carpenters, plumbers, they used to go out, in and out. So maybe they could think about to do something. Or those what we worked inside the factory, we were searched coming in, we were searched going out, because we used to make bullets to rifles. We used to do all kind of ammunition, it was ammunition factory. We always were searched in that. So about the revolting, I don't know. I remember one time that marching in from the factory to the camp, so was a group, partisan or something, they put in two guys in our group to go in the camp, and maybe those guys want to organize and maybe cut the wires or something, or somebody found it out, there's two strangers in the camp, they were searching, and they found him. They found those two. They took him out on the truck, took him, and they shot him. Until they shot him, what they went through, the interrogation, interrogation. And then what they went through. So one time I heard about only, mostly we were occupied with the next day, how to catch an extra piece of bread, how to get a little extra soup, who you know it, and what you know it, and that's all to do with it.
You must have been losing a lot of weight.
I weighed, in this, I got a picture that's after the war. I weighed about 40 kilo.
It's about
90 pounds.
90 pounds. How much do you weigh now?
Now I weigh 200. That's after the war, 1945. Maybe about 3-4 weeks after the war.
What kind of a shirt are you wearing in this?
That's this stripe. Stripe, what we were wearing in Buchenwald, in the concentration camp, we were wearing stripes. In Skarżysko was a labor camp, we could wear our civilian clothes.
Why do you carry this picture with you?
That's a memory. That's the only thing that is left. How can I forget? I give it to my children. Everybody's got a, I made copies, and everybody's got a picture like this. That's all.
These are unhappy memories, aren't they?
In a way, it's unhappy memories. In another way, if God give me that I lived through this, and if I can tell you what I went through, I'm not telling you even now 1% the days, every day, what I went through in Skarżysko was indescribable. I mean, you can the jobs what I was working. If I start to tell you, if I was working in Granaten, and I had to stay by a machine, but it used to break square pieces of steel, 55 kilo a piece, and I used to grab them like bricks and stack them up in bricks. Then I
by yourself.
By myself, just grab them.
120 pounds.
Grab them. They came out. That was a, the big long steel came. And that a guy was studying, he's in New York, Yume Feugel, he used to stay with a torch, he used to burn the four corners, and then he measured out, and then when they pulled it in, was a big, call in Polish, lomaczka, that means bricks. A big machine was two knives, triangle knives, but one was pressured with water, one with power, with air. And a guy was a handle, and when this piece of steel was face down close to the knives, and when he pulled the handle, and this pressure, the water with the air, broke this piece, and it came out through a chute, and I had to grab it and stick it up. Grab it and stick it up. All day I had to stay in grab him. 55 kilo a piece. And then they took it to the oven, and then they put it in the oven. Then when the machine had to be repaired or something, sometimes they took me to the oven. And when they put it in, these pieces still through this side of them, went through the fire, and came out, was burning shells. So I had a big tank hanging on a chain, and I had to grab this thing, and I had a half a moon, and I had to scrape it off, this burning, and then that was went in a press. From four edges, became eight edges. And that pressed on eight, and then made a little hole, and then went through another precision, and that went through and got as long, maybe about 15, 20 inches long. And then, what to tell you, the procedures, what I went through, and I worked on every one, they put me on every one to work it. I was young, I tried, I didn't give up the hope, I was hoping that some days, that maybe the war will come to an end. I always went to people, I always give hope to people, I told them that everything's got a beginning and it's got an end. So I remember I used to work with a rabbi. He was from Pietrakov, the Radish Trebe. He used to carry those bottles of air for this guy with his welding. So he didn't have to, he should have a style how to roll this bottle. So he used to pull it. And even I was 18, 19 or 20 years old, and the rabbi was 45, I said he's an old man. He was pulling. Me and another fellow in Toronto, we used to run out and we used to help the rabbi out. Because we had respect for him as a rabbi, and he's an older man too, and we tried to help him out. And he always blessed us. He said, God will help, you will see that you will survive. I believe that his blessing maybe helped. I tried, I always tried, I'd never give it up. And I could die a lot of times. And I remember I worked in this Krasiska, I worked by a press, by a sewing machine, but it was sewing big trees. And those trees, they made dice for the presses. And I had a throwing. I used where my job was to just to set up and to watch the oil and the water be running and be cool off the soap, but the soap not get hot. And I figured that will take maybe 2 hours or an hour and a half. I was supposed to tell the foreman that I'm going to the toilet. And I didn't tell the foreman, I figured I will be back. I went into the toilet, and the toilet, you got the old gossip. You know how much the bread, the value of the bread, you know, how much where the war is, where the American states, how the Russian states, the whole politics and everything went on in this toilet. And I forgot to return so quick, and this saw cut through this piece of steel, and somebody had to reverse it. And nobody had reversed it, the pressure was so, this saw, this box busted. It was maybe over there about 20, 30 barrels of oil. The whole plant was with oil. And they came, and one fella came, he's in Israel now. He says, Bill, you're dead. I said, what happened? He said, your machine, my machine was the name, the Buchard. Buchard busted. Oh my gosh, like my father and mother died. So I ran in and I saw the machine busted. So already the Germans with the red band with the swastikas, who they were, maybe a dozen of them, they were standing in the oil over the knuckles in the boots. And they say, where were you? I said, I was in the toilet. How long? I said, about 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Is we saying already about 10 minutes, and you were not here. I said, maybe it took, I didn't have no watch. I said, or I couldn't answer either. I just said what they asked me. You saboteur, you bust the machine. I said, I don't know what saboteur is. I'm not a saboteur. Yeah, you were saboteur, you bust the machine. So the man, the foreman was a Polak. His name was Gatza, I remember the name. So he couldn't stand it. He knew what's going to happen. He took a board and he hit me over the head and over the back, so I shouldn't stay in front of them, because more I stayed, more they were ready to grab the gun and just give me the bullet. And he just took a board, and when he hit me, I ran away, so I didn't face those Germans. And then they give an order to two guards, take him and shoot him. Right away, they took me out, and they started marching me to shoot me. And then a Jewish fella, he was a welder, he said he can weld this together, he can fix the machine, will be like new. And I was already a few feet away, and they hollered, bring this dog back. Bring them home zurück. So they walked me back, and I came, and in between them, they put me to another job, and they fixed this machine, and they brought me back. I said, I don't want to work on this machine. They said, why? He said, because I don't want to be responsible. I'd rather work on a plain work, not this. You got to work. So I worked, and then they gave me another piece of steel, and they had some hard piece in it, and the teeth got cut in the feet, and the saw busted again. Oh my gosh, I said, now what's going to happen? So finally they came, and engineers came, and they saw, and I was there. And so they saw that it was not my fault, it was the fault in this piece of steel, and they finally liquidated this machine, and they put me to another job. So I'm telling you, so I had I had faith in me, and I had hope that I was so many times. Then I was sick on the typhus, and they put me in the hospital.
This was
in San Francisco. Everything's San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they put me atop on the. This was the same thing, and they put me atop, and then I didn't eat. I had a high temperature, and you know, and then in the typhus, the time changes, and I had a nurse. I don't know what she, a Jewish girl, and she used to ask me, "You want to eat?" I said, "No, no." And I was sleeping all the time. And the truck came and they started pulling from the bottom people out, and they took them to the sea camp, and over there they buried them over there in the sea camp. We didn't have no crematorium, and they buried them over there. And every day full trucks, and I was laying on. Thank God I was laying high, and finally I was feeling good, and I said to her, I would like to have some. And she gave me the soup, and the soup, but they brought it in to this hospital. They couldn't take it out. It had to be or spilled out or eat it up. So I don't know how many quarts I was eating. And then I came to myself a little bit. Then doctors came, and I said to the nurse, I know it's dangerous to stay in this barrack. I said to the nurse, I'd love to go home, I mean, to go to the camp. So, okay. So the doctors were sitting. So like we have a Thursday from God, I'm telling you the honest truth. When the doctor was sitting, and he was sitting by a table, and he had a little bell, and he told me to march through. And just from laying, from the weakness, and the filth that I had on me, and everything. So in the temperatures. So I marched through one time, and they told me to march back. And I marched back, and then they said, okay, he can be relieved. When he can be relieved, so I walked out, so another guy. So we had to walk maybe about 3 or 4 miles to a bed house. So everybody wants to hold on to the other. We were so weak, we couldn't walk. So we were laying on each other and just holding. We made it to the bed house. When we came to the bed house, we took off our clothes. And the hot water was just washing us through. And they took our clothes, they put it in a kettle, you know, and they steam it out because it was lice and everything, dirty, filthy. And they give us back the clothes. And then we came back and they give us a shonung. That means we can stay in the camp for recovery for 3-4 days. And second day, they call us out to all what we are in the barracks, and they go and they go put us on a truck and to kill us. So when I saw this, so the night shift was standing, lining up at the gate, and that was not far from the gate, and I was standing, and they didn't call you by the name, they call you by the number. This number should go on the truck. So I didn't go. So I figured to myself, I talked to myself. I figured if they want me, let them come and pick me up. Why should I volunteer to go on the truck? So the guy next to me, he saw the number on me. He says, that means you. I said, they don't mean you. If they will call you, so do what you want. And I didn't move. Finally, when I stayed, and I saw the line going to the, close to the gate, and I hit the group was going to work, you know, and I went with them out and marched into the factory. When I came to the factory, and I hid it over there where I used to work, then I told the foreman, he was a nice Polak, and I told him, look, so-and-so happened, so-and-so happened. He said, no, I'm going to keep you. Don't worry, he brought me some food, and I stayed and hidden by this, on the oven, and I was warming up, and I stayed over there. Then how long can I stay over there? So I stayed about 2 days, and then I had to report. The commandant from the camp was a Jewish man, Albert. Very nice man. Very nice man.
And what do you mean the commandant?
The commandant, camp? You see, the guy that was charged over the camp.
Was a Jew.
Was a Jew, and he was a Jew, and was a German. The German was Kinnaman. He had a herb with a dog. And they had a Jewish man, Albert, he was in charge over the camp. And they had a whole police station with Jewish policemen. And I notified one from my hometown. I said, go into Albert and ask him, what should I do? Because I heard that you can have confidence with this Albert. And he walked into this Albert and told him, look, I got a fellow from my hometown. And he's hiding out in the factory. And he looks in my name and pulls out the paper. And I'm shot already. I'm dead.
They shot the people in the
They
truck?
Took him away and they shot and they killed him. He said, this guy is dead. He said, no, this guy's alive. So he gave me another number and he said, bring him over, I want to see him. I returned to the camp and I walked over to Albert. He said, if you could do this, he said, you got another number and nobody knows you. And I stayed in the camp. So why I bring this out? Because I want to live. Some people didn't want to live. Because if they saw somebody's dead already, he says, he's already over, and I have to go through this. So I said, no, he's dead. He doesn't have no hope. Tomorrow it happens a miracle. If the war is over, he doesn't have no chance. And me, as a living, or if I will be, how long I got the bones, I will have the meat on me. And then I always said to everybody, it was a Jewish expression, adost bein ist im Fleisch.
What does that mean?
If you got the bones, so you will have the flesh on the bones. Or if the guy is dead, he's dead. So that's what I bring it out. For instance, when I cut the typhus, I'm going back and forth. So I had maybe, I don't know what the temperature goes in Europe, I think it goes in the 90s. I had so much temperature that I went to work with the temperature because I knew if I have to go in the hospital, I will be dead. So then one morning, they're calling up. So we had to have a roll call in front of the barrack, and they saw somebody's missing. So they had Jewish boys, we call them the Red Cross, and they walked in and looking who stays, and they found me laying in the in bed. They said, what's wrong with you? Here, people standing here waiting for you, and what's wrong? Why can you get up from bed? I said, I'm sick. I got high temperature. So they went in, and he brought me out, and just for counting. And then the people went to work.